Shortly after the September 11th attacks, the U.S. government asked for more powers to fight terrorism. Among the first tools the government sought, increased power to conduct wiretaps and other forms of electronic surveillance. Law enforcement and intelligence officials argue that better surveillance is fundamental to stopping terror. But legal and technological restrictions blunt the effectiveness of electronic monitoring. NPR's Larry Abramson reports.
There are basically two ways to conduct electronic surveillance. You can zero in on a single conversation. You could call that the needle approach. Or you can sift through the entire haystack and look for something interesting. The U.S. government's most secret intelligence organization, the National Security Agency, looks through lots of haystacks every day.
One listening post, for example, picks up 2 million pieces of communications an hour. That's faxes, email, data transfers, phone calls, cell phones, any kind of communications.
James Bamford has spent decades studying the capabilities of the NSA. In his recent book, Body of Secrets, Bamford documents the NSA's struggle to keep up with the growth in worldwide communications. The agency has figured out how to eavesdrop on private communication satellites. It's found ways to tap into the fiber optic cables that carry an increasing amount of data and voice communications. Bamford says that collecting more data may solve one problem, but it creates another.
At the end of the day, you've got to reduce the amount of information you're collecting to something that some human being sitting at the White House or at the Pentagon or at NSA or someplace can actually sit and read and absorb and make sense of.
Making sense out of all this information takes, well, intelligence, computer intelligence. During the Cold War, NSA built supercomputers that could decipher, say, communications from Russian military bases or messages from Chinese diplomats. Now, Bamford says, NSA is retooling, working on software that can search for suspicious phrases in a much bigger haystack of information.
But if somebody, if some terrorist is picking up a cell phone and he calls up somebody else and they're talking about delivery of their grandfather's Christmas present, who knows? They could be talking about delivery of a bomb.
Unable to unlock the content of many messages, the nation's intelligence agencies have tried another strategy, searching for unusual patterns.
Somebody that they know may be associated with a terrorist, he normally gets one phone call a week. All of a sudden, he's getting 8 calls a week or 10 calls a week, indicate that maybe something's going to happen.
The NSA faces another restriction on its power to snoop. By law, the agency cannot eavesdrop within the boundaries of the United States. Any effort to tap into the communications of criminals or terrorists here will have to follow the needle approach used by the FBI and other law enforcement agencies. Domestic law enforcement officials must focus on a specific target, a suspect in an investigation. Even then, they can't listen to everything. Former FBI investigator Scott Charney says police must practice what's known as minimization. They must practically close their ears when criminals talk about everyday life.
Now, if as you begin to listen to this call, they're talking about something other than a crime, you actually have to stop recording and stop listening. But recognizing that there may come a time when the conversation shifts, you may talk about going to the ball game, and then a few minutes later say, and by the way, I want those 4 kilos, you can do what's called spot checking, which is after about a minute or so, you can turn on the machine, begin listening again, begin recording, to see if they're now talking about criminal activity. If they're not, you have to turn it off again. Then you have to wait, and then you can spot check again.
Mess up on this or any other requirement, Charney says, and any evidence you gather might be thrown out of court. As cumbersome as these restrictions are, state and federal police use wiretaps over 1,000 times every year. But criminals and terrorists now have lots of new ways of communicating with one another that can be much harder to monitor. Computers, for example, allow virtually anonymous communication. Scott Charney points out that email can only be traced back to a computer account, not necessarily to the sender of the message.
So I say I'm Abe Lincoln, they give me an email account, and I send an email to Larry Abramson saying I'm going to kill you. And you go to the provider who says, we don't know who Abe Lincoln is. He opened the account 4 days ago. He hasn't used it since he sent that email. We don't know what to tell you. And so you can't just go to the source the way you used to.
To combat the anonymity of online communications, the FBI has developed a gadget that takes more of a haystack approach. It's called Carnivore. David Sobel of the Electronic Privacy Information Center says this computer program sweeps up all the messages passing through the computers of an internet service provider, such as America Online.
And that really is a very radical departure in terms of collection of data from what we had traditionally seen in the telephone world.
The FBI says that in a mobile world, tapping individual phones doesn't always work. Police have to go to the network, to a part of the internet, to intercept messages. That's why the Justice Department asked for the power to wiretap suspects, even if they moved from cell phone to cell phone or from computer to computer. The USA Patriot Act, passed after the September 11th attacks, makes that easier to do. David Sobel says tools like these may make sense, but they are also dangerous.
Suddenly, an order can immediately be served on that public library to permit the full-time monitoring of the internet traffic moving in and out of that library, merely upon the suspected possibility that the individual who's of investigative interest might go into that library and might use one of the computers.
In fact, some of the September 11th hijackers used library computers, but the FBI didn't know that until a librarian told them after the attacks. When police do snare information, it sometimes shows up as gibberish. That's because anyone can scramble their messages using easily available encryption software. The FBI can only get that message if they know your secret password, and here again, the agency is making up lost ground. The FBI got hold of the password to an encrypted message in what could be a landmark case. David Sobel says the password in question belonged to an alleged New Jersey gambler named Nicodemo Scarfo.
The FBI, in 1999, obtained a court order to, in effect, break into Scarfo's office and secretly install in his computer some mechanism that allowed the FBI to monitor everything that he typed on that keyboard.
But where breaking and entering isn't feasible, the FBI has found a way to jazz up this eavesdropping tactic. It's a program called Magic Lantern. It arrives via email and can be secretly installed on any computer. Magic Lantern apparently works just like some commercially available software. Richard Eaton is president of a company called Win What Where. Eaton says his software watches you type and then notifies your boss or the police.
You could set it up to pack up the data that it has and email it off on a timed basis or whenever there's a new connection. You can also tell it to not do that until it sees, for instance, a key phrase being typed in. And at that point, you could tell it to pack up the previous 7 days' data and continue mailing it for X number of days and then even uninstall itself after that.
New technologies can give police and spies an edge, but those same technologies raise fears about surveillance abuses, and that inevitably leads to legal restrictions. That means that no matter how good it gets, electronic surveillance will likely be an imperfect tool against terror. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.